Meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable unto you, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Pack nothing. The first line of a poem called Passover Remembered by Ala Bozarth Campbell, if I recall correctly, South African writer. This piece called, again, Passover Remembered has been used now for close to 20 years for orientation for those of us who do the Young Adults in Global Mission Program as part of our preparation to go out and follow where God is leading into the world. Pack nothing. Bring only your determination to serve and your willingness to be free. Don't wait for the bread to rise. Take nourishment for the journey, but eat standing. Be ready to move at a moment's notice. Do not hesitate to leave your old ways behind. Fear, silence, submission. Only surrender to the need of the time, to love justice and walk humbly with your God. Do not take time to explain to the neighbors. Tell only a few trusted friends and family members. Then begin quickly, before you have time to sink back into the old slavery. Set out in the dark. I will send fire to warm and encourage you. I will be with you in the fire, and I will be with you in the cloud. You will learn to eat new food and find refuge in new places. I will give you dreams in the desert to guide you safely to that place you have not yet seen. The stories you tell one another around the fires and the dark will make you strong and wise. Outsiders will attack you, and some follow you. And at times you will get weary and turn on each other from fear and fatigue and blind forgetfulness. You have been preparing for this for hundreds of years. I am sending you into the wilderness to make a new way and to learn my ways more deeply. Some of you will be so changed by weathers and wanderings that even your closest friends will have to learn your features as though for the first time. Some of you will not change at all. Some will be abandoned by your dearest loves and misunderstood by those who have known you since birth and feel abandoned by you. Some will find new friendships in unlikely places and old friends as faithful and true as the pillar of God's flame. Sing songs as you go and hold close together. You may at times grow confused and lose your way. Continue to call each other by the names I've given you to help remember who you are. You will get where you are going by remembering who you are. Touch each other and keep telling the stories. Make maps as you go, remembering the way back from before you were born. So you will be only the first of many waves of deliverance on these desert seas. It is the first of many beginnings, your paschal tide. Remain true to the mystery. Pass on the whole story. Do not go back. I am with you now, and I am waiting for you. And so after half a summer of hearing about 4 centuries of slavery and oppression for the Israelites, of hearing about how Moses was the only person in the world capable with the gifts needed to do this job, about hearing how he was called reluctantly to be God's messenger of liberation for the people, how he went and declared that word to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." How Pharaoh refused and plagues fell upon the land of Egypt. Here, now we reach the eve of deliverance. The moment before the end of 400 years of enslavement for the Israelites. This is December 31st, 1862, the night before the Emancipation Proclamation comes into effect. This is June 18th, 1865, before the Emancipation Proclamation is read in the last corner of the Confederacy to hear it. This is the day before a new dawn for generations of people here. And it is a night full of both the most beautiful realities of God's promise of liberation, of love, deliverance out of sin and death and into new life and freedom. And it is a night full of some of the worst horror that most of us as people can imagine. Held in tension with each other, because even as Moses delivers the word from God to go and sacrifice a young lamb without blemish, paint some of its blood around the frame of your door, roast the lamb, not taking time to fully butcher the meat, but taking it as is and putting it over the fire that you've already built to get through the night, making unleavened bread because you do not have time to let the bread rise. Now is the eve of deliverance. Now is the moment where God is moving. Be ready, dressed, have your shoes on, be ready to go. Eat quickly, because God is about to do what it takes to free God's people here. Even against the backdrop of that wonder, that sense of excitement, confusion, fear, that dizzying mix of emotions that the Israelites must have been feeling at that moment. That's all against the backdrop of what it took. Because the butcher's bill for the deliverance of the Israelites is nothing short of the death of every firstborn Egyptian. Man, woman, child, even down to the livestock. There is not a, it says that there was not a single house in Egypt that did not know death that night. There is not a single Egyptian household that did not feel the sting of loss, as all the firstborn perish as the angel of death, the Lord passes through the land of Egypt and snuffs out life. This 10th of the 10 plagues of Egypt, and far and away the worst of them, leaving no house, no heart untouched by loss. Because here is the unfortunate reality of Pharaoh's hard-heartedness, of the societal level sin of Egypt, of holding the Israelites in bondage for these four centuries and refusing to let them go because it might have been inconvenient. It might have set us back in terms of our wealth and our sense of progress. We may have had to be the ones to build our own cities for ourselves. The cost of that hard-heartedness by one person, or at the very most, the ruling elite who have the power to make decisions, was that everybody suffers because of it. And there's debate in Jewish and Christian circles about the justice of it all, about is it just that Egyptian households probably had absolutely nothing to do with the institution of slavery in Egypt, suffered the loss of their firstborn too, right alongside the household of Pharaoh, who absolutely had something to do with that institution. And the reality of it is that I don't have a good answer. I don't have a good answer or explanation for why this, why for so many, other than the fact that the world is a place of deep brokenness, pain, and suffering, sometimes beyond our control. And that at the end of the day, God will do what it takes to free God's people. And then morning comes. Amidst the wails and weeps, amidst the lamentation, morning comes, and with it, freedom. Because at last, Pharaoh's heart of stone is broken enough not to deny that God is God. That God is sovereign, that God rules Egypt, not Pharaoh. And that this God of the Israelites is a God of freedom, who will not relent until God's people are freed to step out of bondage and into life, to step out of 400 years of enslavement and into God's call to return home to the land that God promised and discover there the fullness of God's blessing, the fullness of God's mercy, the fullness of God's justice. Not even the mightiest leader of the mightiest nation of the time can stop God's liberating work. And so the people who are fed, dressed, and ready to go set out right away. On their way, taking with them some reparations for their 400 years of work, the Israelites are free to plunder Egypt on their way out and take with them some of the wealth that they helped create while getting nothing in return for it. And off they go into the wilderness on a proverbial wing and a prayer. Following where Moses and Aaron say to go as God leads them out. To out of slavery and into what? Into a journey to a land none of them have ever seen before. Away from the only place that they've ever known. Away from the only way of being that they have ever known. There is nobody in this crowd old enough to remember what it is like to be a free person. With the exception of Moses, because of his unique background of growing up in Pharaoh's palace. None of them know what it is like. And here they are, on the way into something new. Minds undoubtedly full of questions and worries, joy and concern, all at the same time, trying to sort out what this new life means, what this new world waiting for them is. It is the first of many beginnings. Their Paschal tide. And for us, as we hear this story, we do well to remember that we too are a people whose freedom has a cost that has been paid with innocent blood. The blood of Christ on the cross, an innocent who did not deserve to suffer. One whose suffering, in fact, raises questions about the nature of God's justice, even when you sit and think about it. But yet, here we are. This is how God has liberated us. How God has freed us from our own bondage to sin and death and set us free to step into life. not knowing where we're going, not knowing what awaits us, not knowing another way of being outside of the bondage and slavery to sin and death that is the nature of life in this world, and yet we follow our own minds full of wonder, concern, fear, doubt, joys, and hopes along the way, journeying together. Because this was not the individual liberation of 600,000 people, but the collective liberation of one people of God. And for us, our baptisms, our moment of deliverance from the chains of sin and death in Christ is not merely our individual Independence Day, but it is one more part of the movement of all of God's people out of sin, out of death, and into life. Because God saves a people, not just individuals. God claims a people, not just individuals. God calls us and claims us as part of something bigger than ourselves, of God's kingdom. Not just a bunch of isolated dots on a map, but one people of God. And so our baptism is the first of many beginnings, our Paschal tide. Our story, yes, but part of a bigger one than just our individual life. And that's certainly a mystery. It's certainly wondrous to see ourselves as part of a community that's not defined by geography, that's not defined by time. That's part of God's never-ending story of freedom, of redemption, of forgiveness, and life breaking into the world. And even at the moments that we don't understand it, though, it remains our story and our tale to tell to the world that our God is a God of freedom. Our God is a God of justice. Our God is a God of love and mercy for you, for me, and for all of those whom God has called. And that when God calls, there's no going back. We do not go back. We do not turn around and go back to the house of slavery, back to sin and death. We move forward, one step at a time, embracing the mystery of God's work in our life and our world, putting one foot ahead of the other as we trust and follow. As we listen for the sound of God's voice there in the wilderness calling us on, hearing it remind us again and again that I am with you now and I am waiting for you.